Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for listening. This is Josie Booth with The Mothership on Radio Reverb. On this month's episode, we are talking all about mum guilt. So we have our panel of local ladies who chat to us on various topics each month. They'll be telling us all about their experience of guilt. We also are chatting with Brighton and Hove psychotherapy founder, Mark. He's going to be talking about ways to identify if your guilt is a little bit too much and ways that you can tackle it. Don't forget, you can get in touch via our Facebook page, which is just The Mothership Radio Reverb. So drop me a line. I always love to hear from you guys.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
I'm here with our lovely crew of local ladies who answer questions for us on a variety of topics. Who have we got in the house today?
Holly.
Sarah.
And Chloe.
And we do have another special guest.
Hi, I'm Abby.
Abby doesn't actually have any nipsticks, but she's here to join and actually man my child, who's currently silent, but you might hear him crying in the background in a sec.
She has got something.
She does have something.
An Ovia app.
Okay, she's got the app. She's prepping for the child, but it's not quite here yet. So, yes. So we are here chatting today about mum guilt. Now, ladies, have you guys experienced... I mean, it's something I think... Before I had Phoenix, my sister-in-law had said, like, the minute you have a child, even when you're pregnant, like, the minute you start getting guilt for various things, it never goes away. So have you guys felt that?
I suppose for me, because Leo didn't take a bottle, I kind of resented him for a long time because I couldn't get any freedom from that. And now I feel really guilty about it because now we're breastfeeding really well and it all turned out fine. And obviously he was just trying to feed, which for a baby is all they do when they're younger. So I guess I still battle with that guilt a little bit now because now he's getting a bit older. And now I'm at the tail end of it. I'm kind of wanting him to stop feeding so much. And now I'm feeling guilty about that. So it's true what you say. You kind of always feel guilty, whether it's like a different kind of guilt. You're always worrying about something.
You can't really win, I guess. Like, you'll always find something. It's almost like it's your own brain beating yourself up.
Totally that. Because at the beginning, he was feeding so much and I was resenting him, so I was feeling guilty. Now he's feeding much less, but it's still too much for me and I want him to reduce them. So you're just kind of, like you say, constantly battling with that.
Yeah. I think I just kind of mirroring your situation but the other way around. Like, I felt like I didn't, I kind of regretted the fact that I introduced a bottle early on, but he did kind of need it, but I did regret it because I thought, well, if I'd have persevered for longer, maybe the boob thing would have worked out more. So I felt guilty that he didn't get as much breast milk as some other babies did. He's certainly a strong boy. He seems pretty fighting fit. What about you, Holz?
I had a bit of a different guilt thing going on. So at 6 weeks, I left Reggie for the first time and went away to a hen do for two nights. I think it was only two nights, but it certainly felt like three. Got extremely drunk, forgot that I had a child and like any responsibility at all. Had a fantastic time, but I definitely felt guilty about it. And when I got back, because I was still breastfeeding, I remember I couldn't feed him until about Wednesday, and I got back on Sunday because I just felt so dreadful about everything I'd done to myself and just thought I couldn't give him my breast milk. But again, he's been fine and he carried on feeding. So I think you beat yourself up over things and then you realise that they're absolutely fine. So you try to stop doing that, but you still do. I had quite a lot of weekends away and went to a wedding in Barcelona and stuff where I was leaving him. And I think it was quite...
You had the right idea, though, you know?
It depends what way you look at it. It felt good and it felt nice to get away and I didn't feel that Reggie was losing on anything, but I felt guilty because none of my friends were doing the same and I felt like I was interrupting my bond.
You've been very lucky that you've been in a position where you can leave them, and if you can leave your child and know that they're in safe hands, then if I was in that position, totally, I would have left Jake, but unfortunately I couldn't leave Jake at that moment in time, and I think Sarah would have, I think Josie would have as well. Like,
what I was worried about a lot of those times, my guilt perhaps stems from the fact that, because I still live at home as well, which is ideal in some ways and far from ideal in many other, but I actually worried that would my son know that I was his mother? Because he was with my mum, and me and my mum look similar anyway, and my mum's so... my mum's so amazing with babies, and I just thought, God, if I get back from Barcelona, is Reggie going to know that I'm his mum? And that was quite sad.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, like, the idea of having a break is an absolute dream, then you give it to yourself, and then you feel awful for it. You're like, I'm such a bad mum for doing that. Chloe, what, anything that you've come across that you've just made you feel a bit guilty?
So I suppose ours is probably towards sleep training, so Jake isn't the... by any means a good sleeper, and so we have tried lots of sleep training methods, and we will do it and he might be crying for 2 hours, and then you feel really guilty that you shouldn't be crying, or you might allow him to cry because you think he's not in pain, and then he is in pain, and then you feel guilty because you let him cry, or you might try and take the dummy away. And then you do it for 2 days and he's cried non-stop, and then you give up and you give him the dummy, and then you feel guilty that you've even tried to take the dummy away in the first place. I do think it is constant guilt, but it's a different, you just kind of, it's short-term guilt as well. I think it's just part of the process.
I guess a new thing that's coming up for a lot of us, Holes, slightly different view because you've actually been working for a couple of months now, haven't you? So tell us about that. Was that a bit of a struggle?
Again, it was a struggle. So I went back to work when Reggie was 4.5 months, about 4.5 months, totally by accident. It was not planned. I'm a teacher, and I went into school, and my the person who was covering my supply, thank you. I was here. She dropped out that day, or so they told me, and needed a teacher to cover 2 days. And at the time, I was like, oh, God, I didn't know what to do. It was just an absolute turmoil to be in. But I decided to go back, and I went back 2 days a week. And I was terrified, again, of leaving him. I was worried about sleep deprivation. I was worried about all sorts of things. And again, about him thinking that I wasn't his mother, because I was missing. But it was... Again, everything just works out in the end. Out. Yeah, it pans out. And he does know. And now he's 10 months, all he wants is me. And secretly, I'm like, yes, this is what I wanted. In about 4 months' time, I'll be like, get him away from me, please.
And so I guess for the rest of us, we're all coming up to the time where we're starting to think about going back to work. And there's a whole barrage of things that you have to think about. I'm going through the kind of nursery versus... childminder debacle. You guys have picked childminders, haven't you? But like, the thought of going back and leaving them is becoming a reality now, and that scares the hell out of me.
It's really hard because obviously I've not really been able to leave Leo for different reasons, like obviously not taking a bottle, the main reason, and the fact that we don't have family nearby us. So it's really hard, you know. I'm quite a worrier anyway, and so leaving him with a childminder is just going to be a really big deal. But I'm very much trying to get my mind around the fact that this is going to be really good for him, and he needs it. He needs to be around other children. It'll, you know, help with the development, bring him out of his shell. So it's hard. It's going to be really hard having a different lifestyle, but I think actually it's going to be ultimately worth it.
So for me, I think it's more the fact that I'm anxious about Jake. He doesn't sleep, and so I don't want him to scream for hours and hours rather than refusing to go down for a nap. Or I suppose that's the thing. I'm actually not worried about leaving him too much, because I do leave him with my mum and he's fine. But when I have left him, he refuses to nap. But I suppose it's just one of those things that whether he cries with me or cries with someone else.
At least you'll get a break.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, exactly. Go back to work to get a break.
I think, it's just a non-stop. So I wonder what the next battle is that we'll be facing, or the guilt that will be coming up, I guess.
Felix is already doing that, but
that's not really something I feel bad about, though. I feel guilty about, I feel guilty because I just let him walk around the place now, and then he hurts himself, and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have let him go in the bathroom.
I must admit, I think he is probably hurting himself, because Leo's starting to, he's pulling himself up on everything, but he's quite boisterous, and he has no sense of what he's doing or where he is, and he's just launching himself everywhere. So in the last few days, he's fallen off the bed, he fell off his changing mat this morning, like, not badly, I had a hold of him, but sometimes you just can't help it, because in a split second they've done it. But I think to myself, these things are going to happen, and we've pretty much all been there, and you just have to make sure it's not that bad.
Well, we had an incident with Jake the other day, and I just hadn't realised that all of a sudden he was on the go, and I left my huge cup of coffee, thankfully, was cold, on my table, And then I literally left him for 1 second. I came in the room and he poured the whole thing all over him.
Oh my gosh.
And I felt so guilty that I'd left this cup of coffee on the side and that I shouldn't have done it. And if it was hot, it could have scalded him. And so I think there's going to be a few more incidents to come where I've forgotten things that are on the side and he's got it because...
Yeah, and I think the big thing is don't underestimate your child, because the thing that you don't think they can reach or pull down, they can. Phoenix managed to pull this vase, which was basically higher than him by about half a foot. He managed to reach up on his tippy toes and stand and pull it and nearly pull it down on himself. I luckily ran over in the nick of time. The whole vase would have fallen on him. That would have been serious. So I guess the guilt of kind of letting them get in any sort of pain whatsoever, which
I
guess
that's for me is gonna be
Anyway, ladies, thank you so much for sharing your tales of woe and your fears of guilt and all that sort of stuff. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon sans babies. After tunes. I've had a glass of wine after tunes. I am from Newcastle, so there you go. See you later, ladies. Bye.
Bye. Radio Reverb.
Up now, we've got the lovely Mark from Brighton and Hove Psychotherapy. Mark, thank you so much for coming to have a chat with me today. Just briefly, what does psychotherapy actually consist of?
It's probably an infinitely enormous answer I could give you to that. But in very broad terms, psychotherapy is two people sitting in a room and talking.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you can get that with friends and family as well. But the difference is that it's a relationship that focuses on the client's issues. So the job of a psychotherapist is very much to leave their own emotional material, kid material, their own story, their own needs outside of the room, and to be really thinking within the context of the relationship with the client.
So specifically this month, we are talking all about mum guilt. And you mentioned on your website the mother trap. Tell me a bit about some of the traps or challenges that mothers faced.
When you initially contact me to have this interview with you, I was thinking about, how would it be for your listeners that as a psychotherapist, I'm a male, and talking about mother's issues and mother's guilt, and indeed this mother's trap that you've just mentioned. But I think actually the answer to your question is also partly why can be found and why women come and see me as a male psychotherapist.
Mm.
And that is the feedback I've had when I ask people, well, why have you sought me out, or why would you prefer to talk to a man about your experience of being a mother? Is that many women find it difficult, many mothers find it difficult to talk to other mothers and other women about their own personal experiences of motherhood, particularly where it's not living up to expectations.
Yeah.
So the expectations that they might be getting from outside. So I think part of the trap is this isn't a clinical term, but perhaps we can use it in this context, the great myth of motherhood, in that some mothers, and the media reinforces this and adverts reinforce this, there is this idea that motherhood should be all-fulfilling, all-encompassing. It should be this wonderful cosmic experience.
Mm.
It should give mothers everything they've ever wanted. And the reality is it's just not like that. Now, there may be some women who are more fulfilled than others, and for some lucky mothers, it may be the ultimate experience. But for many women, particularly women in the modern world where women are in the workplace, where there is equality, or at least there should be equality, that women going from jobs where they've had good salaries, responsibility, have traveled, have colleagues, going into the role of being a mother can be really difficult. It can be terribly isolating for starters. It's a bit like having a job where there's no salary, there's no holiday, there's no paid leave, you don't have any colleagues, you don't get any appraisals, and there aren't going to be any promotions either.
Mm.
It's just an ongoing slog, if you like. I think that's one of the key traps, if you like, of motherhood, in that many mothers can end up feeling terribly isolated by their personal experience. It isn't living up to how they imagine it should. I've had many mothers say to me, well, and they haven't said it sort of outright initially, there's a real sense of guilt and shame around it, saying, do you know what, I find it really boring at home with my infant or my 2-year-old or whatever it is. That's a really big part of it.
And so you touched upon pressures being internal, like women actually create these high expectations and kind of place them upon themselves. Do you think there's also societal changes that are adding to these pressures, or where are they all coming from? Why is it developed more so than maybe previously?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And actually, I would say that the pressures are predominantly coming more from outside. I don't think, again, this is just based on my experience and the mothers that I've had privilege to work with and think this through with. I don't think necessarily that mothers are conjuring this up and placing this pressure on themselves necessarily. Mm. But I think men and women are quite confused about roles. So
right, yeah.
This is coming about through positive social change, that women demanding more equality, and appropriately so. But the reality is, and I think this is hard for us all to accept, is that we're being told we can have it all, but we can't have it all.
Mm.
So women, and this applies to men as well, but we're talking about mothers, women in the context of motherhood, they can't have it all. They can't have the high-flying career as well as being the perfect mother. It is impossible. Something has to give somewhere.
Sure, yeah.
So thinking about that sort of on an individual basis, and then applying that also to the couple, whether it's irrespective of whether it's a same-sex couple or a heterosexual couple, point is the couple can't have it all either, that there are compromises that need to happen on both sides.
Mm.
So broadly speaking, going back to your question, I think there are massive social changes that have happened. There are massive cultural changes. Very few of us live on the same street as our extended family, as our own mothers or our aunt or other maternal figures who can perhaps support us in this journey into motherhood.
Yeah.
There have been massive family changes. What does it look like to be in a family now? So many families are blended families. Personal changes. Women actually wanting much more than being mothers as a be-all and end-all, or being a housewife. And actually, I don't think that was ever what women wanted in any shape or form. But somehow that was all that was provided to them, at least for a period of time, by society, by a patriarchal society. So there's been enormous amounts of change. And I think part of the problem for us all, and particularly for mothers, because being a mother is such a critically important job, and it's such a difficult job as well, is that there is so much input from outside about how to be a mother. This is how you should be a mother. This is how you should feel as a mother. Isn't it blissful and wonderful to be a mother?
Yeah.
Actually, mothers buy into it, and mothers can end up being each other's worst enemy. So they all put on a brave face, and, oh, yes, it's wonderful, and I'm really enjoying it, and it's fulfilling. And actually, deep inside, there can be this core of loneliness, which many women find that they don't have anybody they can talk to about that. And often a difficult first step is, well, I'll go and talk to a professional, and I'll make sure it's a man, so at least I don't feel so terribly shamed as I would do if I was talking to another woman.
The pressures that she's imposing on herself are happening, but it's an offset of all these other external factors. So I guess everyone has become a bit of a master juggler in life these days, but certainly, you know, for mums, that's a very big part of what they do. How would you inform a listener to maybe identify if she's at a stage where actually she maybe should come and get some support?
I wonder if it's worth sort of distinguishing between two different factors. So there are external factors where guilt can be very beneficial. So let's say, for example, that a mum has let her child down in some way, and mothers and fathers let their children down all the time, and that's part of parenting, and it's part of learning to be a young child in the world, is that our parents aren't perfect, but ultimately we can survive that. So let's say that a mum forgets to pick her daughter up from a dance class or from an after school club, and then realises and rushes over and she's half an hour late. I think that guilt is utterly appropriate.
Yeah.
It's not that she should be beating herself up about it, but that guilt has a social context in that perhaps she can even say to her daughter or son, you know, mum got it wrong. I'm really sorry. I feel really bad that I left you waiting there. Mm. And in that context, there's a process of repair that can go on. So what I'm giving an example there is external behaviour. And I think many mothers feel that at times their external behaviour is letting their child down in some way. So, you know, a classic topic that is very much on Mumsnet or in the media at the moment is screen time for children. And we're all aware that at times parents will perhaps, against their better judgment, allow their child perhaps to sit in front of a screen or the television just so that they can get some washing done or some cooking done or get on with life.
Sounds familiar.
Is that perfect parenting? Well, probably not, but this isn't about being perfect. Some guilt might come up from that, I think, is utterly understandable. However, where it tips over into a mother struggling with her feelings around motherhood, so rather than it being a question of, am I doing it right, it becomes a question of, well, am I feeling right about this? I think that's a really risky area, because that's an internal process, and that's where a mum is really questioning her own identity in the role of motherhood. And I think that's where it can be very helpful to seek out the support.
You mentioned on your site that that psychotherapy doesn't necessarily eradicate the feelings, but rather it helps you to set more realistic expectations. So would you suggest that mum guilt is more about, it's about perception?
I think often it is. I think that's absolutely right, Josie. And there can be other instances where it's more complex. So I'm thinking about a clinical example where I had a mum who struggled enormously with the role and felt a great deal of guilt around that. And through a long process of us working together, we collaboratively discovered that her guilt was actually rooted in the loss of a child of her parents. So that's an example where other psychic factors and, if you like, intergenerational trauma can come into it. So how that played out for her unconsciously was, I cannot take pleasure and meaning from being a mother, because it highlights for my parents that they weren't able to do that for this lost child. So there was this sort of guilt that had been passed from one generation to the next, and it meant for her embodying a position of actually taking pleasure in being a mother, and having to deal with, if you like, what she was carrying of her parents, a loss that had never been processed. So often there are a lot of complexities in there. And I think also for mothers, and this is a really key issue, their own experiences of being motherhood come to the fore when they become mothers themselves.
Right.
So there can be very real experiences. They start to feel a sense of grief, loss, abandonment, anger, where they've been let down in their childhood, that perhaps they've been able to push that away or put that to one side, particularly if they built a successful career and had been out there and, shoring up those defences. Suddenly they're faced with being a mother themselves. So to be able to give to an infant or to a child something that they weren't given, each time they do that, that loss is felt. So there's a working through that has to happen there as well.
Wow. And just quickly going back to that lady that you were treating, was she aware of the fact that she was feeling those feelings because of her parents' grief? Or was that something that actually was kind of drawn out from your sessions?
It was drawn out over time. I mean, obviously, I'm changing some of the facts here,
because
the last thing I'd want to do is want anybody to be identifiable. But the reality was that whilst it was cognitively known, so the story was known to this client, that this had happened in the family, she hadn't made the link between what she was feeling and the story, which is so often the case for all of us. So many of us, where there is trauma, so the definition of trauma is actually something that doesn't have shape and form. We can run off, I had a car crash, but I was fine. But then we get in the car and we can't work out why we feel really anxious. So that connection has been lost. So trauma is where the connection isn't there. And working through trauma enables us to make the connection where the loss can be felt or the anger can be felt or whatever the emotion is, and work through to some degree. So no, in the example that I gave and you've just brought up, that person knew about it cognitively but didn't really think anything about it. And it was actually through a working through process of the deficits in her childhood, including the one we've just named, the loss of a sibling, that she realized that what she was trying to do was to give her child what she hadn't been given.
Right.
And that was very hard, because it brought up an enormous amount of grief for her.
Of course. Wow. Gosh, this is all fascinating stuff. I could talk to you all day, Mark. It's really, really insightful. Sadly, we're going to have to come to the end of our chat now. But how could people get in touch and find you if they would like to kind of reach out and receive your insights?
Well, It's very easy to find me. Anybody who Googles Brighton and Hove psychotherapy.com, so Brighton and Hove psychotherapy is one word, can find me and can also find, I run the practice with my partner. There are 12 of us, different clinicians with different backgrounds. So we offer, it's only talking therapy. We're not a multidisciplinary clinic in that sense. So people can find us there. They can read blogs. They could get some more insight into some of the issues you and I have talked about today. And then if they do feel that they would like to see either myself or one of our clinicians, then please do get in touch.
Fantastic. Mark, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Boom. Another show completed. Mum guilt tick. I hope you guys have enjoyed listening. I love having you tuning in. As always, you can listen via a variety of channels. So you can tune in Sussex, in Brighton, on 97.2 FM. You can listen to the full show, including all the music, via Mixcloud. My name is Josie Glitterbosher. And you can also tune in via Audio Boom to listen to the full podcast. Thanks again, and I'll catch you guys next month.